This parable in Matthew's gospel, Jesus tells near the end of his time on earth, has been used by many to remind us that to care for others is to do the will of God in the world. And if, mind you, I say if we consider the king in the parable to represent God, then the sheep represent those who are accepted, and the goats are those who are not accepted and are instead sent away. And sure, that is one way to look at it. For many years, perhaps it would even be accurate to say for centuries, this parable has been taught as an allegory. And as an allegory, Jesus would be talking about himself as the Son of Man, the king sitting in final judgment, separating the good deed doers from the do-nothings. Biblical scholar Amy Jill Levine, who looks at the stories Jesus tells from her lifelong Jewish tradition, calls the parables pearls of Jewish wisdom. She also says, if they do not disturb our sensibilities, then we ought to go back and read them again and again. It would be better, she says, if we perhaps started seeing the parables not as about heaven or hell or final judgment, but about kings, politics, violence, and the absence of justice. If we do, we might be getting closer to Jesus. So, what if the king in this parable is just an earthly king who separates the two groups, not because they could see what was in front of them? After all, both groups ask, Lord, when did we see you in need? But rather, separated them because of what they did and did not do. How very earthly, right? I think we can all agree, though, that not everyone can make the same choices in life to be kind and compassionate, even when faced with the same circumstances. For example, a single working parent in a minimum wage job cannot give to the food pantry the same as a double income, no kids household can. Someone who is disabled by injury or accident or illness, someone who's mentally ill or homeless or both, doesn't have the same means to be generous as one who is healthy and whole in mind, body, spirit, and employment. Should they be shut out of a great reward because they had less in life? All our sensibilities shout no. All our belief in a just and merciful God says that would not be right. Or at least we hope it's not. Because if our eternal reward is dependent on how well we have lived, we have all fallen short of the glory of God, and we always will. Now, elsewhere in our scriptures, we read that where we end up in the end is not contingent upon our good deeds here, but rather on what's in our hearts, on our faith. Once again, I'm going to suggest that that's maybe a little dicey for us, since faith and doubt often dwell side by side. I think the criterion I am most comfortable proclaiming is that of God's mercy. I believe in God who sees our faults and loves us anyway. I believe in God who hopes the best for us and still loves us when we are at our worst. I believe in God who redeems us even when we get ourselves into terrible messes of our own making. And I believe in God who cannot be fully known. Even God's mercy cannot be fully known to us. But since this is church and we've been taught parables must tell us something about God, well, let's start at where Jesus begins. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne and all the nations will be gathered before him. All the nations. That's Bible code for those outside the faith. In first century Palestine, Matthew's listeners would have heard all the nations, and they would have known that Matthew meant non-Jewish persons. Gentiles, pagans, people who don't know God and don't follow Jesus. That's who's being talked about here, the outsiders of the faith. And what Jesus says about those outsiders is not that the way for them is barred, nor does he say the only way to get whatever this inheritance and kingdom represent is if they profess faith in Jesus Christ, all he says is, the good you have done, the ways you have lived with compassion and practiced kindness here in this earthly life, that is enough. Does that idea shock you? That God has an open pathway for those who are not part of any congregation, and it has to do with how they manifest love in their hearts in the here and now. But doesn't that sound more like the loving God with the merciful heart whom we worship? God whose mercy sometimes surprises us and defies our expectations? God who, through the person of Jesus, demonstrates mercy to a tax collector and a Roman soldier and an aging mother-in-law and an adulterer and people living in Gentile territory and women and children and Samaritans. The love that Jesus shows knows no boundaries. No one is excluded from his gift of grace. An old story about a rabbi and his students begins with the rabbi asking, "How can you tell when night has ended and day is on its way back? Is it when you can see an animal in the distance and can tell whether it's a sheep or a goat?" one asked. "No," answered the rabbi. "Is it when you can look at a tree in the distance and know whether it is a fig tree or a peach tree?" asked another. "No," the rabbi replied. "Well then," the students demanded, "when is it?" "It is when you look on the face of another human being and see that he or she is your brother or sister. Because if you cannot do that, no matter what time it is still night," said the rabbi. Next Sunday, we will begin the season of Advent. And our worship theme will focus on giving the gift of being present to one another. Being present is something every one of us can do for each other and for ourselves. Being present is looking on the face of another human being, all human beings, and seeing them as siblings. It is opening our eyes as well as our hearts and sharing the gifts of hope and peace and joy and love and light right here and right now. So practice being present this week as you gather with friends and family to give thanks. And may that practice prepare your hearts for the Advent journey that begins next week. Amen.